Welcome into the 9 to 10 show, American DA Live, for this, the 13th day of December. Brought to you by Landscaper's Corner at 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Be prepared for snow. Landscaper's Corner has rock salt and Landscaper's Choice ice melt, fast acting and safe for concrete. Call Landscaper's Corner at 225-9433. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson is with us. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Jack.
As you know, and nobody likes cases like the one we're going to hear about this morning. It's just a kick you in the stomach kind of case, and it involves sexual abuse of a child. And not one of my favorite topics that we talk about on this, but as you said earlier this morning, those things do happen, and you guys have to deal with it. So tell us who we have with us this morning.
Well, you're right. This child sexual abuse has become more. It hasn't become more and more prevalent, but it has had less of a stigma than it has in the past, and as a result, more people are reporting it. And so, and this is a really serious case that occurred in Kenton County. And it was prosecuted by two prosecutors out of the Kenton County office, Kate Bumgarner and Corey Plybon. And Kate's with us today. Kate, welcome.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, it's early. So far, so good. And Kate, I was talking to her, Jack, because what we do is go make sure that we got the connection mm-hmm. and so forth. And Kate been holding on, so she listened to Scott's news and weather and traffic and all the rest of it. And I asked Kate, give me a little of your history, and so I'm going to do the same thing for the people that are listening. Kate, tell us a little, where are you from?
Sure, I'm originally from Louisville, Kentucky, a Center College grad. Went to Northern Kentucky University for law school. Was a prosecutor over in Ripley County, Indiana for a year. And then came over to work here for Rob Sanders here at the Commonwealth Attorney's Office up here in Kenton County.
Well, tell me a little bit about Ripley County. What is that?
It is a very small, kind of on the outskirts of Cincinnati, a very small county. Sees a lot different crime than I would see in Covington every day. Very rural farming town. Started over there doing child support prosecution and juvenile prosecution.
How's it different? Different kinds of crime.
Mainly one. And I know, Ray has spoken about this frequently. I think that there is, of course, a heroin epidemic going on up here, and also, in Lexington and the major metropolitan areas in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what we see up here, with the exception of these types of crimes we'll be talking about today, is heroin driven. That was not so much in the rural counties. It hadn't made it out there, but I think, the more and more this epidemic continued, as it is actually going out to these more rural areas as well.
What were they using to get to happy?
It was more of the pain pills and those types of things. But as I did leave at that, when I came over here to Kentucky, they were starting to see more heroin cases. There's an interstate that runs through there, and it was all coming out of Cincinnati. Mm. So it had kind of started to trickle its way down to the rural areas.
Well, the heroin, to follow up on that, the heroin that comes to Lexington typically comes from Detroit to Cincinnati or Dayton,
right,
down here. And we, of course, get some from Atlanta. But
right.
It's heavy-duty kind of stuff. Now, tell me a little bit about your jurisdiction up there.
Sure. We've got Kenton County, which is obviously the main and the majority of cases that we see come out of Covington, just because of it's the largest city here. It goes all the way down south to Independence, some small Taylor Mill, some smaller other towns down there, covers a tiny bit of I-75. But it's mainly, we're sandwiched in between Boone and Campbell County, and we basically get a lot of crime that comes south from Cincinnati, and then of course Covington as well.
Well, now you all have an issue in Kenton County, and a lot of the other cities or jurisdictions in the state have a different issue than we do in Lexington. We have basically one major police department, and you all have lots of different little cities up there, and you have a lot of different little police departments.
Right.
And what sort of issues does that create for a felony prosecuting office like yours?
It is, we have a wonderful support staff here, and I think without them being able to, like you said, Ray, we've got, gosh, maybe 15 different departments, including a county police to, you know, smaller towns, and then we've got the major department is Covington, and then we'll work with the state police as well. But I think the major issues is, you know, a lot of communication, but we've got wonderful support staff here who basically keeps us all in line. So they make it a lot easier on us, but sometimes it does pose some issues with, you know, communicating with all the different departments.
Let me ask you one thing, and this is just that we have a couple of prosecutors in our office that are Center graduates, Andrea Mattingly. And Brad Bryant, are you acquainted with them?
I'm acquainted with Katie Bouvier.
Oh, yes.
She was a sorority sister of mine, so she was a year younger than me. I know Katie pretty well. So.
Well, Katie's a good girl.
She's great.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about some yard bird name. That's an old man's term for a jerk.
It's a geese term, I believe.
Well, it is. Yeah. It is, and I've been abused on my Kroger critic every Saturday. Yeah. Tells me all about it. Tell me about Kyle Sheets, and how did you first become acquainted with the name Kyle Sheets?
This was a case that in January of 2012, we have a, like I said, a very small police department with only one detective, Detective Dennis McCarthy, in Ellesmere, Kentucky. I bet hardly anyone probably knows where Ellesmere is.
Where is it?
It's sort of sandwiched in between a no man's land and Erlanger and Florence.
Okay.
But the Ellesmere Police Department was contacted in January. A local grade school had reported a student that had reported being sexually abused by her stepfather. They, of course, had a duty to report. They call law enforcement. And then we take the Detective Dennis McCarthy took her to the Northern Kentucky Children's Advocacy Center.
Okay, now let's stop there a minute.
Absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about Children's Advocacy Centers, because we have a wonderful Children's Advocacy Center here in Lexington. But tell us what the value of a Children's Advocacy Center is in the investigation of these kinds of crimes.
Well, to be honest, Ray, I mean, they're invaluable. These are trained forensic interviewers, child forensic interviewers, who have had thousands of hours of school and training on how to speak with children about these, you know, horrible cases of sexual abuse or physical abuse. They have a wonderful support staff there. They also provide therapy, ongoing therapy for victims, and access to resources that would help the child in the process after the disclosure. So it's where the law enforcement, anyone from law enforcement, will, in this Northern Kentucky Center actually serves Boone, Kenton, Campbell, and I think maybe Grant and Owen County as well. But the law enforcement officers, if they have a child that's disclosed something, are trained to take them to the center where they have these folks that will interview them and help them through the disclosure process.
Okay, so this Detective McCarthy took this young girl. How old was she?
She, at the time that she said the abuse began, she was 6 years old. But at the time that she disclosed, she was eight.
Did she confide in a teacher? Is that how that came out?
What happened, I believe, is that she confided in another student. This student then went to a counselor or a resource officer at the school, who then spoke with school administrators and her teachers, brought her in. They said, yes, I did tell her this. Yes, it did happen. And it went from there.
Okay, we're going to take a break right now. If you have a question or comment, we'd like to hear it. 253-5956. As Lexington's Morning News continues, American DA Live with Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson. And our guest this morning is the Assistant Commonwealth Attorney from up in Northern Kentucky and Kenton County, Kate Baumgartner. Ray?
Okay, Kate. So this this youngster, 8-year-old, is at the Children's Advocacy Center there in Northern Kentucky. And tell us about how the investigation proceeds.
Right. From that point, Ray, she was interviewed by one of these trained child forensic interviewers. Their whole goal is to not ask leading questions and to make sure that the disclosure from the child is true and accurate as possible. So at this point in time, and to be completely frank, this is one of the most horrendous cases, sort of the abuse that went on and for how long and how pervasive it was. She made a disclosure that led to the charging of a count of incest because he was her stepfather, a few counts of sodomy, sexual abuse, and rape in the first degree. She disclosed that he had been having intercourse with her over a long period of time and very, very specific details. At that point in time, the Detective McCarthy, was able, after her disclosure, he was able to obtain a search warrant from our office, served the search warrant on his residence. Went to the residence and found several items that directly corroborated the 8-year-old victim's statement, including homemade and professionally manufactured pornography.
Let me stop you for a minute. You talk about corroboration. Why, and first of all, what is corroboration? And then why is it so important when you're dealing with cases involving children, or any for that matter, but particularly with children?
Absolutely. I think it's integral to any investigation that's involving children. A lot of times in these cases, there is no physical evidence. So, you know, when you hear on CSI or these things, when they, you know, you're hearing a rape kit being done, or some, you know, there's some physical evidence of something. In these child cases, there's typically no physical evidence. So if a child makes a statement saying, hey, I saw this pornographic DVD, or I saw this object, and he used this object during, you know, when he was doing these horrible things to her. If you can find those objects and find what she's discussing, it gives credibility to her statement and makes her, you know, what I would believe is more believable to a jury. So basically any evidence, you know, if she discussed, corroboration is any evidence that she discussed, if you can find, you know, exactly what she was discussing, it gives more credibility and lends more credibility to her statement.
You know, Jack, one of the great difficulties, and Kate has had to face this, but too many times you have a statement by a child that such and such occurs, a complete denial by the person that's been accused, and it comes down to who do you believe, the adult or the child? And far more often than not, in those kind of situations, juries will believe maybe not believe the big person, but they'll have a reasonable doubt. And as a result, the standard is jurors have to believe beyond a reasonable doubt that such and such occurred. And frequently you don't get convictions in those cases.
All right, we're going to take a break, a short break, and we'll be right back. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. It's 9:37, 23 minutes away from 10 o'clock, as American DA Live continues for this, the 13th day of December. Ray Larson?
Kate? We appreciate you being on and listening to all these commercials. You probably could get some great ideas for going shopping if you're ever in Lexington.
I know, it's making me think I need to get up on my Christmas shopping.
Well, you need to. At Landscaper's Corner and AT&T and whatever else Jack's
hawking this minute.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay, so tell us a little bit about, we had the search warrant. Tell me what they found as they executed this search warrant on the residence where this young girl lived.
Sure. There were the girl described several, and Ray, it's one of these things that's so hard to talk about in these types of cases, because no one can imagine this type of thing, you know, being done to a child, or a child being exposed to these types of things. There were, like I'd already said, some homemade pornography that she had described being forced to watch, as well as some commercial pornography commercially produced pornography, as well as some devices that were used and shown to her when this this individual, the defendant in this case, was engaging in intercourse with her. The other object that was found that led to a second case against Mr. Sheets was a handgun. There was a .45 caliber pistol that was found in the house. Mr. Sheets was already a convicted felon, so as we all know, he cannot possess, he cannot be in possession of a firearm. So what we chose to do is to separate those cases, try the hand, the possession of the handgun by a convicted felon as one case, and then try the sex charges and the sex case as another one.
What was the strategy behind that?
The strategy behind that was basically thinking, as a as someone that deals with, you know, our office deals with a lot of child victims. We have our victims advocate, Stephanie Watson, is a big advocate of this, and she's sort of taught me that, you know, at all costs, you know, try to avoid having a child having to come in and testify in open court. In this case, it's a very young child. So the strategy behind separating the cases was to get the gun case to go first, and then that way, if, you know, he gets convicted on this, gets a certain number of years, hoping to force a plea in the sex case so that the child would not have to come in and testify.
That's really good. That's good strategy, it sounds like to me.
Well, that's the, frankly, that's, you're going to find prosecutors all over this country, particularly in Kentucky, doing everything they can to avoid having a child have to come in and yeah, face the person that victimized
yeah
them. So how did all of that work out, Kate?
We tried the case the end of September. I think it was September 30th. We tried the handgun by a convicted felon case. It was a 1-day trial, very short. The jury was only out 22 minutes and convicted him of possessing that handgun. It was found in his closet in his bedroom. So, you know, it was obvious. I believe the jury found it fairly obvious that he was in possession of that handgun. He received a 6-year prison sentence for that charge. And then 2 weeks later, on October 15th, we took the sex case to trial.
So he didn't. He wasn't the least bit interested in pleading guilty.
No. In fact, during this process, he wasn't interested in accepting any type of offer. So in this type of case, you know, like we talked about, Ray, we don't want a child to come in and testify, but unfortunately, sometimes, and this was one of those cases, it was inevitable.
And that can't be done through video because the defense has to have a right to cross-examine. Is that right?
Well, confront witnesses against them.
And, yeah.
And confrontation has been interpreted as face-to-face.
Did this little girl go through a battery of tests with psychologists or anybody like that?
She is in an ongoing therapy as part of the Children's Advocacy Center and what they provide there for her. Because of her young age, we had what's called a competency hearing early on in the process where we went, you know, and the judge asked her several questions to determine whether or not she was competent, could recollect facts, you know, knew the difference between a truth and a lie and those types of things to make sure she was a competent witness to testify before going to trial.
I see.
Okay, so this slug gets 6 years on
the handgun case.
Felon in possession of a handgun. And so shortly thereafter, you're going to go to trial on how many counts?
It ended up what he was convicted on, and it was 2 counts of sodomy in the first degree, a count of sexual abuse in the first degree, which carries the 2 counts of sodomy in the first degree carry either 20 to 50 or life in prison, and the sexual abuse in the first degree is a C felony carrying 5 to 10. So we went to trial, and that's what he ended up being convicted as. There were several other counts involved. However, just kind of a trial decision that's made by me and Corey Plybon that we went forward on those counts.
Right. Those other counts are still out there. Is that right? I mean, if you needed to, you could reinstitute those other kind of counts.
You know, I think some of them yes, some of them no. There was obviously this was such a traumatic event for the child that sometimes, you know, having her talk about these things that we have to prove these elements in trial was something that, you know, that she just could not get through.
All right, we're going to take our break here. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877. Back with Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson, and on the line with us, Kenton County Assistant Commonwealth Attorney Kate Baumgartner. Ray?
Okay, Kate, how did our 8-year-old victim in this case do at trial?
She was amazing. One of the bravest children I've ever seen. She, you know, we talked about having to confront your accuser, walked into a large circuit courtroom here in Kenton County, sat down in the witness chair, and told her story. So
I know she was 6 when the abuse started. How was she? Is she now?
She is 10.
10
now.
Okay.
Yes, but she was 6 when the abuse started, and 8 when the disclosure came out.
I see.
Yeah, but she was. It was. You know, I've only had to actually testify in court once, but I've been told it's very nerve-wracking, and imagining being a 10-year-old child and doing that was it was a powerful moment.
Well, it was. So what happens? They come. What did the jury do?
The jury in this case, it was a 2-day trial. We put on several witnesses, including Detective McCarthy, who had to watch over 100 hours of videotape seized from the house. The jury was out for about 3.5 hours and came back with a guilty on all counts verdict, 2 counts of sodomy in the first degree and 1 count of sexual abuse in the first degree.
Now, sodomy in the sodomy is what's called deviant sexual intercourse.
Yes, sir.
And as a result, that's as opposed to rape.
Yes.
And so this was what they call deviant sexual intercourse, and it involves any number of types of sexual contact. Once they determined he was guilty of these counts, then you go into what's called the penalty phase, and what happens then?
We started the penalty phase about 8:30 at night, after the jury had been deliberating on the guilt phase. And the penalty phase is when the jury makes their recommendation as to how long they believe this individual could serve in prison. With this case, the 2 counts of sodomy in the first degree both carry a penalty of 20 to 50. To life in prison, and the sexual abuse in the first degree is 5 to 10 years, and they can either run at the same time or the sentence can run one right after the other. And in this case, the jury decided to give him 40 years on each count of sodomy in the first degree, the maximum of 10 years in the sexual abuse in the first degree, to run consecutively for a total of 90 years.
Well, they were making a statement. My experience, Jack, is when a jury recommends consecutive sentences, meaning one after the other, then they mean it. So what did he ultimately end up getting sentenced to, Kate?
The sentencing phase in front of the judge wasn't very long ago, a few weeks ago, and in this case, he was sentenced to the 90 years. The judge accepted the jury's recommendation and then decided to run the handgun case, the 6 years consecutively to that, for a total of 96 years.
So when will he be eligible to be out?
That's a great question. Because of the statute, the way the statute's mandated, if you have been convicted of these A or B felonies, the maximum amount of time that you can actually serve is 70 years. But like Ray said, I believe that in this case, the judge and the jury were making a statement when sentencing him to 90 years. He can be parole eligible at a 20-year point, but, you know, hopefully the statement made by, you know, the jury in this case of the 90 years will give the parole board some thought before thinking about paroling him.
No, well, we hope good. So.
I'm curious, and not just curious, I'm concerned about the girl and how does she pick up the pieces?
You know, I wish that's a question that, you know, I could answer, but I'm not sure how. I think this is something, you know, hopefully this our victims advocate here, Stephanie Watson, is wonderful about helping victims and victims' families get resources that will help them through this process. And also the Northern Kentucky Child Advocacy Center in this case has, you know, therapy resources and other things for this victim. But I don't think that's a question I can answer. I think that, you know, hopefully it'll give her some concern, or, you know, that'll give her some solace that this man is most likely going to spend the rest of his entire life in prison.
I don't think you mentioned, and if you did, I apologize. It went by me, the mother in this case.
Yes. She was involved as well. She testified as well briefly. She was at work quite a bit. And what the child alleged in this case is all these incidences occurred when the mother was not at home.
Do you believe it?
That's a good question.
I know that doesn't matter in the eyes of the court, but I'm just curious if you believe it.
I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm just happy that in this case the jury believed and I believe correctly believed the view of the child.
Is she still in her mother's custody?
I don't think I can comment on that.
Okay.
Or if I know.
Okay.
But, you know, these types of cases, I think that, you know, that she does have an a support system that she will be able to have. Sometimes in some of these cases, the child doesn't, but this child does have a support system, and hopefully will, you know, be able to get through this.
Let me tell you, Jack, this is Kate Bumgarner is a prime example of the superstar assistant prosecutors that are around the state. She's smart, she's articulate, she's dedicated, she's a very impressive young woman, and we're very proud that they choose this profession.
Thank you very much, Kate.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks, Ray. Thank you, guys.
Bye. Update from ABC Next. If you're listening to WVLK AM, stay with us for Live with Lee. Scott's in for Lee today. If you're listening to 101.5 FM and the Coaches Show with Joe B. and Denny, I'll be back Monday morning at 6:05 Central. You-